Good evening, everyone, and this is John Campbell giving you a very warm welcome to all our listeners on BBS Radio for Miracle Hour. And it's a very warm welcome. I'm sitting here in the eastern Mediterranean on the island of Cyprus. It's about 87 degrees, 10 o'clock at night. Beautiful, balmy night, and it's wonderful to be with you. I always look forward to these times. It's such a lovely opportunity for me to share some of my miracles, people that I've met on my journey. And as I was coming over here, I was thinking about the journey itself and where it's taken me. And one of the major things that happened to me, of course, opening up to spirit and the understanding of spirit, I had to meet different people because I had never understood the concept before. And as most of you know, my wake-up came about 10 years ago, and I started, once I got the understanding that I needed healing, not really fully understanding what healing meant, but knew that I'd spent a lot of years in a lot of unconscious behavior, which had taken its toll not only of my body, but also my mind, but definitely my body as well. And I was led to a young woman who sadly is no longer with us on the earthly plane, but is certainly, you know, around on the spiritual plane, and a beautiful woman who introduced me to the concept of different bodies. I didn't realize I had more than one until I met her. And this lovely young woman started to educate me about my emotional body and mental body and astral body and all that kind of stuff. And she told me about a woman who started, who used to work with this young woman's mother, who also had crossed over. And I got my usual zing, which I've shared with you, is this kind of knowingness that I get in the pit of my stomach when either a book or somebody I'm supposed to see or meet, or a book I'm supposed to read, or a movie I'm supposed to watch, I always get a zing, a very clear kind of message, and I'm disciplined enough, thankfully, to follow that these days. And so I contacted this woman, and yes, she was everything that she'd been said to be, and she I went to see her, and I had an amazing education over a period, I guess I saw her over a period about 1.5 years, but she taught me so much. She did a lot of healing on me, and I just loved her from the moment I met her, and we're very, very much soulmates, I think, and she's born in around the same time of July as I'm born. We're both Cancerians, and she's a wonderful woman, and I'm very, very excited and proud that she's agreed to come on Miracle Hour today as my guest. And it's a great pleasure for me to welcome Maureen Butler and bring her on the program. So, Maureen, a very warm welcome to you, and I don't know how the weather is over there in Walton Thames in England, but it's certainly warm here. How are you today?
Oh, hello, John. Lovely to hear your voice. The weather, I'm afraid, is really miserable here. It's rained all day and been very grey. But I can visualise your wonderful sunshine, and I'm enjoying it by proxy.
Well, yeah, and we are very much in tune, Maureen, and it's really lovely to hear your voice. And I hope Jo's there with you. Please give her my love as well. She's a wonderful daughter. And,
I will do. Thank you, John.
Come to your family. And I remember very clearly first coming to visit you, and it was so exciting because you sat there and you gave me the crystal to hold. And I sort of opened up to this kind of thing, but I was completely amazed at the accuracy of your reading. I'll always remember that, and the integrity that you showed. And of course, then we started to work together, and you were a great help to me. And listeners, it was wonderful. If I can just take a second, Maureen's got this wonderful place, and you go down her garden, and there's a wooden treatment room, which is just amazing. And I remember the first time I went down there, I lay down on her couch, and she placed, I don't know, what do you call it, Maureen? What do you call that thing, with that copper thing that you put
over? Pyramid, my pyramid, John.
Oh, that's your pyramid. Yeah, well, you put that over me and covered me with a blanket, and then did so much work with magnets and then crystals. And I used to go out. I remember I used to go out. I was, like, unconscious. This treatment was stronger than pentothal. So, yeah, and I had amazing healing from it. You know, it was wonderful. So, Maureen, tell me, how did all of this start with you? Tell me a little bit about your own life and you know, when you first connected, and how did it all start with you?
Well, as usual, John, when you're on a spiritual life path, it begins very early in life. I'm told that when I was an infant, about 2 years old, and being carried by my grandfather onto my father's ship that he'd served on, that I started screaming and said I wouldn't go on there because of all the sailors who died. And my grandfather said, "You don't understand what died means." And I said, "Yes, drowned." And that really was the beginning of it. And I was about two and a half, I suppose. And it wasn't easy at the beginning because I came from a family who were really quite disapproving of the psychic and spiritual things. And, you know, as a child, if you're told you're just imagining or you're wrong, these things gradually, you know, kind of sink to the bottom of your consciousness. But everything, you know, through my childhood and early teens, I would see things and know things, and that really was the beginning. And, of course, you gradually evolve. I began to study various things. I started, as a lot of people do, with astrology, you know, more interested in the character analysis of astrology to get a better understanding of people. And I began to realize that my interest was in people and also a great interest in healing. But at that time, I was still only working with the psychic and spiritual side. I began my psychic development about 32, 33 years ago at the Spiritualist Association of Great Britain in Belgrave Square in London, and I found that quite fascinating. My whole life has been a learning process, and I moved on. Then I began to learn about applied kinesiology. Through, as you know yourself, John, the different things you do, the different things you learn, you come in contact with different people. This opens you out yet further, opens you to other things, other thinking. In the meantime, when I first began to sit for psychic development, I learned how to meditate, and I found that my learning increased tremendously with the meditation. I would come back from meditation with all kinds of information and understanding and having learned. And one of the things I brought back from a meditation was a number, and I offered that number to so many people I knew. I thought it was a radionic frequency, but in fact it wasn't. It was a frequency number, but it was one that we could use to access people, humans, higher energy. But it took a time to get to that. Anna, the mother of the lady you were speaking of, she was working with a therapy involved with kinesiology. We began to work together. We were like two sides of a coin, and we exchanged clients. And then Anna became very sick, and I gave up my work to look after her until she passed. And then gradually through meditation, the whole treatment that I use now gradually came together with the number frequency that I'd got in meditation as a basis. And that's really how things came into being. That's just a potted version, obviously. There's much detail in between. But it's how I arrive where I am now. And I find that I use my psychic gift, sometimes within the therapy, sometimes quite separately, but it's very helpful, you know. And of course, as I haven't mentioned, along with your development, your learning, your understanding, you develop your own philosophy in life and your understanding and your learning of people, and I hope really, I could say, learning about what life is really all about and why we're here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's, I mean, that's an amazing, amazing kind of thumbnail sketch of how you got there. I think the part that interested me with you was you've got this wonderful gift of imparting information in a very humble way, you know, great humility without sort of being like the, you know, the flash teachers that we used to have at school and that sort of thing. And I remember very much the workshop that you came and did in Turner's Hill that time, and everybody that went remarked about how much fun you had as well. You know, there's always a laugh very close to your work. And I think that's so important and often missing in the spiritual world these days, that we are actually meant to have fun. That's part of the journey of life, you know. But when you were talking about your first realization that you had this, when you were very young, when you were only two, I mean, I can really relate to the, you know, the very common thing. I think you hear a lot of people say, you know, that they saw things or heard things and they were shut down by parents or family members who, it's obviously frightening to them. But when you had this opposition to that, what happened? Did you actually shut down? You stopped seeing things, stopped hearing things, and that didn't return until you were older? Or, you know, I mean, tell us, I'm always interested to know what you did in the physical world, you know, that whether there was any work you did or whether you started this off straight away.
Well, when I was very young, I remembered I saw quite clearly, I think I was about 11, and I absolutely adored my grandmother. She was my sun and moon, she was everything, and she was dying, and I was heartbroken, and I can remember praying all night that she'd live. And then I just saw a scene of my mother coming into the house, how she would stand. My father had been looking after us, what he'd cooked for us, and what she said when my grandmother actually died. And that, in fact, was the case. It was exact to the tiniest detail. That is exactly what happened. And, you know, and I told my parents, and even at that age, I was aware of a level of fear. They kind of would dismiss it and stop imagining things. Well, we don't talk about things like that. But even at that age, I was aware of kind of tiny flashes of fear. So often and often through my childhood and into my teens, I would know things, I would see things in my head, I had a lot of deja vu, this kind of thing. But you learned actually not to say anything because you realised that it was upsetting to other people. I think when I started work, I think probably I would have to say when I was 16 and a half, maybe 17, I was working with a girl whose mother was she went to clairvoyance, and I said, well, what are they? And she tried to explain to me. And she and her mother were also interested in astrology, and that's where I took my first interest. And then I went, I booked a reading with one of these clairvoyants, and I went to a charming little man in Golden Square in London. And as I walked through the door, he said, the Archangel, he said, you should be doing this. And I thought he was absolutely crazy. I didn't know what he was talking about. And he said to me, as he was doing the reading, you know, you will be doing this. And obviously he told me various things, and it was kind of fascinating and exciting, and then you dismiss it. And then the occurrences of knowing things, being aware, seeing things, happen more and more frequently. But then when, as you know, John, I've had a checkered life and various disastrous relationship, which often happens when you're on this kind of a life path. It's our pathway of learning. And eventually I married the father of my children, and I felt so powerfully at that time that I knew I needed to be on a spiritual life path and to develop my psychic abilities. but at the same time, I felt that my children needed their mother very much, and I didn't want to divide my energy. So, in fact, I waited until my youngest son was 2 years old, and my parents then stepped in and looked after them, when I started to sit in circle and go for my spiritual and psychic development. And that's how that side gradually evolved. But through the years, you know, I mean, I was working in a very unprofessional way, I have to say, as I see it now, where, you know, I'd be aware of things and I'd be giving off information and what have you. I now feel that that's quite undisciplined, because my view, as you know, John, is that we should not give this information unless it's requested of us, because it can disturb and upset people, which, sadly, I have to admit, I probably did, but I have to say I did it in ignorance. But that's how it began. That's what happened. I've kind of always been aware during my lifetime, if you know what I mean, since my very early years.
Mm-hmm. And when you started, you know, that spiritual path, did you find, was that the time when you ended up leaving your relationship, leaving your marriage? Was that when you ended up ending your relationship with, you know, with your husband?
with my second husband, yes, that was really strange. This was my second husband, who is the father of my children, and he really was very disapproving. My parents, strangely enough, everything turned around, which it tends to in life, as you're aware, and my parents, who'd been quite disapproving and disbelieving, by this time realised that I'd got something and something was really going on, and they were very supportive, and so they would come and look after the children when I went for my development classes, because my husband at that time really didn't want anything to do with it and really was very disapproving, and so it wasn't made easy, but it was made possible. Having said that, I have to say, because of my knowledge, my understanding of where I was, I didn't feel that we separated and subsequently divorced, because I didn't feel that I wanted, you know, his thinking and his prejudices and his bigotry to affect my children. My feeling was always, if they're going to become prejudiced and bigoted people, then it will be by their choice and not because they're taught to be that way. And obviously there are other factors as well, but that was a very important one. But the strange thing is, John, and this is how life is so funny, you have to laugh, darling, you've got to have a sense of humour. It was about 3 weeks after we separated, he came to my house and told me that a friend of his that was seriously ill, he'd been diagnosed with diabetes and a serious heart condition, and would I put him on my healing list? And from that time forward, you know, he was a great supporter and believer. And that's love,
yeah.
Isn't it, love?
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that amazing, though? But you know what, Maureen, I think more and more, you know, I shared a little bit about, you know, the book that we're getting together now about relationships, you know, that saying, the secret in the selection. I think so often we get into relationships, you know, without doing any research about beliefs and everything else, you know, and very often it's very difficult if there is a polarized attitude towards different things. It makes it difficult. And, you know, I hear this story time and time again, how people move on. But the most important thing, I think, is that you were able to move on in a place of love and follow your path, you know, your journey, and presumably he did the same. But it is interesting that how they suddenly wake up to it. And did you, the other thing that amazed me when I started to work with you was, and so another part of your work which I really admired, which was, although you were so deeply committed to the spiritual, you also were very balanced and very grounded, and you certainly kept open to the efficacy, if you like, of the traditional allopathic medical field as well when it was necessary. And also amazed me your knowledge of that field of medicine and drugs, especially, you know, mental drugs for mental conditions. Where did all that come from, Maureen?
Well, again, really, John, when I was very young, when I was still at school and I was studying, I was fascinated and interested with biology, anatomy, physiology. It was a passion. And it's curious the way things happen, isn't it? I was so fascinated and so interested with my background and, you know, and I mean, we were a poor family. There was no way I would ever study to be a doctor, but I really believed I wanted to be a nurse, and I did most passionately. And I studied, and that was the beginning of my learning of anatomy, physiology, etc., as I said. And then the strangest thing, at the age of 13 and a half, we had to have our TB injections at school, and I went home from school one day and found my clinic card, appointment card, on the doormat, and found myself shaking from head to foot in floods of tears, and realized that I had the most terrifying and paralyzing fear of needles. And it just went on getting worse. I would faint, my vital signs would go crazy if I had to have an injection. And I realized at that point that although it pained me greatly, that I wouldn't be able to be a nurse because I'd never be able to give an injection and so forth. And so I kind of drifted away at that point, but still I had this fascination and need for knowledge and understanding of the physical body and how it worked. And that kind of stayed with me always, and it still fascinates me greatly. I can never have enough data, enough input. But then, of course, you know, there was the growing of the spiritual and psychic side, and of course I'm at a point now where I realise quite clearly that had I followed that life path and gone into nursing, I never would, I doubt greatly, that I would have gone into the natural complementary medicine and the therapies, and especially the one that I now practice. And so all things are for a reason, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And do you think that, looking back, do you think that what seemed to be an irrational fear of needles, and I say seemed to be irrational, do you think that could have had its roots in a past life experience? Or?
Yes, I think it probably did, John. I think it was, in one of my meditations, I saw myself quite clearly. The whole thing was laid out before me. This was after Anna, the mother I told you about, the friend of mine who I nursed when she had cancer. She was
Yvonne's
sister-in-law. She was the sister of the man, my third husband. And during seeing this vision of a previous life, I saw myself as a young Jewish girl in a prison camp, part of their experimental program. And interestingly, this lady who had become my dearest, closest friend and eventually my sister, I saw her there as a younger brother. And I thought quite clearly, then I understood. And it was through Anna's treatment and going with her when she had a chemotherapy, and holding her and comforting her and holding her arm when she was having the cannula put in and transfusions and so forth, that awful fear left me.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's very interesting. And then when you started the your work, did you get all your knowledge about the human body through your study of anatomy and physiology, or did you go to any nursing college or anything?
No, I didn't, John. No, I didn't. It was all study. And Anna and I, when we worked together, we had the profound belief that when people came to us with a condition that they wanted help with, they were the best specialists you could speak to. They had detailed information of what was wrong with them and what had happened and what it was called and so forth. And then, of course, you'd refer to your reference books and, of course, now the computer and so forth to to get the extra information to know quite clearly what was going on. And so it's a question, really, of just keep adding to the knowledge that you already have.
Right, right. And then how did you... I mean, it's learning, I guess. You read a lot and all the rest of it. But it's amazing how it developed, you know. I mean, I remember when I first experienced your work with using what you call a witness. Can you explain a little bit about that? Because it always used to be your male au pair used to come down and he was a witness. Explain a little bit that for our listeners, if you could, more.
Well, I'm not sure whether you mean witness or surrogate, John. Do you mean surrogate?
Oh, surrogate. What's the difference? Well, first of all, what's the difference? That's a good way.
Okay, right. Well, when I developed the therapy that I'm using now, I borrowed some of the techniques from kinesiology, one of them being the surrogate principle, that kinesiology, I don't know if you're aware, but it's all about muscle testing, getting answers direct from somebody's energy through their muscles. I mean, I'm simplifying things here, but that's basically what it's all about. And I borrowed that from kinesiology to use in my treatment, because when you speak to people, they're within the situation, within the imbalance that they are. And so you can ask them questions and they will answer you truthfully. But because they are within an imbalance, state, they can be misled by their own thinking. Do you follow that?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I've
right.
got that part.
Okay. So if I insert between myself and them a surrogate, somebody who is I don't wish to be rude here, but like an empty tube, with skin contact, if they touch the client, and then I use the muscles of the surrogate, I can communicate directly with the client, with their higher self, and get the absolute truth of the situation, and not the view of the person, you know, who has the problem in their conscious imbalanced state. It comes from the higher self. And that is what I call the surrogate, the form of surrogacy I'm talking about. When you speak about a witness, I also work with radionic therapy. And when you're working with a client, when I'm working with a client, I usually take a little piece of their hair. Because if they need my help, if they're distressed or they're unwell or something between their treatments, coming to see me in the next treatment, I can pop their witness under correct radionic frequency to assist them and help their imbalance into my radionics machine and send the signal. And so that's one way I would use a witness. Another way I would use a witness of the person is if they're at a distance. I've done this often when people are abroad and they will phone me and, you know, and they say they have a problem, can I tell them what's going on? I can either hold the witness myself and douse the answer, or again, use a surrogate to hold the witness and through muscle testing, find out what's happening for them. That's the difference between using a surrogate and having somebody's witness. Because the witness, be it their hair, toenail, fingernail, spot of blood, spot of urine, whatever it is you use, it holds their genetic code, and that's how the radionic frequency finds them. Because, of course, we are all unique. Nobody has the same genetic code.
Right. Okay, that's fabulous. Thank you for that, Maureen. That's really clarified the difference, because I wasn't aware that, obviously, I was talking about the surrogate, and it's really clear to me now, because one thing I remember was that the surrogate, whoever he was at the time, was never present when I was talking to you about my issues and what was going on. And presumably that was, apart from the confidentiality thing, obviously if he had that then the information, then he would also be similarly influenced. I guess that's how that works, isn't it?
That's absolutely right, John. You know my feelings, I have profound feelings about privacy and confidentiality, but also, as you say, it's so easy for somebody else's mind to be programmed and, you know, they don't realise it very often. So, of course, that's why the surrogate is never present during the talking.
Yeah. And also, the business with the witness is fascinating as well, because I remember, do you not have a little machine or something that you put the hair or the nails into? Is that right?
Yes, that's right, John. That's my radionics machine. That's how I put the frequency code in that will assist the people, make the corrections they need, and then it's hooked up to another machine that we called an interrupter or a broadcaster that literally sends that frequency out. And I've worked on people in that way in India, America, Australia. It's just incredible because, I mean, I've been told, and I can only assume that it's the truth, that the frequency, the radionic frequency, or the radio frequency, keeps circling the globe.
Right.
And each time the person who requires it.
Yeah. It's fascinating, and you know, even you can imagine, you know, that 10 years ago I would have been completely... You know, I would have poo-pooed all this. I just didn't have a clue. But my journey, as you know, was pretty fast track. You know, and I started to learn this stuff, as I said, through Yvonne, and then just went on with my reading. And it reminds me that I came across, and I think I may have shared this with you, the organization EMC Squared through a book called Sanctuary, where they have developed a computerized technology where you actually send them a photograph of yourself, and they go in these trays, and they've developed a means of energetically removing energetic imbalances. And, you know, I mean, it blew me away. But now, of course, it's all coming from the understanding that we are all one at the highest level, I guess, and that they can actually remove energetic imbalances. And now, apparently, introduced enhancing energetic energies. So it's all sort of around the same kind of principle, isn't it?
Well, I would assume so, John. I don't actually know anything about what did you call it?
Well, it's an organization called ENC Squared, and the founders wrote a book called Sanctuary, The Path to Higher Consciousness. And they do energetic imbalance removal, if you like, through photographs using the concept of the holographic, you know, concept.
Yeah, well, that's fascinating. I don't actually know about them, but I mean, you know, that's often for me, if somebody, when I'm doing my psychic work, my spiritual life, spiritual work, somebody will give me a photograph, and, you know, just holding a photograph, there's so much that you can, just by holding it, there's so much that you can actually see and tell and feel around that person. So it makes perfect sense to me that it would work in that way. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. And you know, we spoke a lot about this, really, was the realization that really it's the mind. And since I, you know, came in contact with A Course in Miracles, which is really where my spiritual path is now, hence the name of the show, Miracle Hour, the understanding of the mind being the all-important element, and that the power of the mind is quite phenomenal. And I think we explored some of these concepts together. And have you done any more on that? I mean, is there... Would you still go along with the fact, the power of the mind?
Well, John, you don't have to ask. You know my views on that. I feel that the power of the mind is extraordinary. It's immense. It's still so little is known about the real, genuine power of the mind. Still, scientists are discovering areas of the brain, areas of the brain that... they still don't know the function. It's quite incredible. It never ceases to amaze me how we can be so clearly and so easily programmed. I mean, in simple ways, if I can just illustrate to you that when Anna was in hospital at the Royal Marsden for lots of occasions, several times she would have to stay in, and I would always go in and stay with her. And there was like a recreational room there, and the patients would go there. Now, when Anna actually went there, it was quite miraculous. She went in as an acute case, which, as you know, cancer is chronic, not acute. So they didn't actually expect her to live the week. In fact, she lived another 14 months after that, and they really just couldn't believe it. But while we were in there, she was in such a frail and dreadful state, you can't believe it. But we would see people come in, and in this room, everybody would chat, and they'd all discuss what types of cancer they'd got. And most of these people would say, and the doctor said, oh, well, you know, I've got 3 months to live, 6 months to live, 5 months to live, what have you. And these people were strong and vital and healthy. And Anna was extremely frail at this point and looked as if she was on her way out. But, of course, because we were there so long and we kept going back, we would see these people gradually run down. And sure enough, around the time that the doctor had said it would be their end, they'd obligingly turn up their toes and pass away. And to us, it was an illustration of how we can be so easily negatively programmed. Now, equally, we can be positively programmed, but it's never quite as easy as the negative programming. But it gives you a clue as to the kind of thing that goes on within our minds and how we need to adopt a pathway, a thought, a belief system, a way of going through our lives and trying so hard to see the positive, to see the sense in things, to see the sense in negative things, to be positive and forward moving, and to always expect the best. Because you know what, John? The human body is designed to survive. It wants to survive. So if we give it the right kind of help, it wants to comply with that. We actually, you know, are far more able to be healed than most of us believe. When you get stuck in the negative, and let's face it, John, we've all been there, it's so easy to lose the faith. But if you can keep it, the belief, and keep positive, you do really have far more chance. So many things are possible.
Yeah, I mean, I totally go along with that now, and I've come to the belief anyway at this stage in my life is that the mind is where everything has to be healed. We have to change our mind. And you know, when I first came in touch with A Course in Miracles, it was reading it and well, really getting a fully understanding of The Course in Miracles from Gary Reynolds' book, The Disappearance of the Universe, which I really recommend to anyone who feels inclined to explore this concept, any of our listeners. And so it's a wonderful book and a wonderful book for giving clarity for the real meaning of the Course. But I think the thing that explained to me, which made perfect sense, was that, you know, that all healing had to be in the mind. It was a question of changing the mind. And it's based on the whole of the teaching is based on the calls really quantum forgiveness, which is a slightly different type of forgiveness. It's the understanding that everything is a projection of the mind, and that it's really our unconscious guilt and our unconscious shame that comes and we project out, and the things that we think are bad in our lives, we've actually brought these about through unconscious guilt and shame, and that the tool for healing is forgiveness, and it so fits with me, you know, and tied in with the understanding that we keep coming back, and that this is a classroom, that life is a classroom, that is the purpose of it, and I think that the real lesson that we've all come to learn is forgiveness, and it's a forgiveness of everything, you know. So, and it's so difficult when the muck is flying, it's so difficult to remind ourselves of this, but it's definitely what I've come to understand, and I think this is in line with what with the work you do, with the work you do, really.
Yes, indeed, John, because my profound belief is, as I say so often to people who come to me, you know, we see so many people, and obviously when you do the kind of work that we do, very, very sad cases, cases of terrible wrongs done, dreadful abuse, all kinds of abuse, mental, emotional, physical, sexual abuse, all sorts of things. And, of course, the damaged people that come to us, they often have serious hatred, negative, intense negative feelings towards the people, the perpetrators of this. And we understand this because it's natural, because we are human. We're not perfect. We're not pure spirit. We are human, and that's why we're human, because we're here to learn and to understand. But what I always say to these people is, you know, this person who's hurt you, they're living their life. They're usually quite sorted, John, quite happy. They're deceivers. This is how they get away with what they do, but they're living their life apparently quite normally and happily. And the poor, damaged person is sending them all this bitterness, hatred, resentment, and so forth. Now, as I say to them, look at that person. Look at how they're living their life. They're unaffected by what you're projecting, what you're feeling. But look what it's doing to you. You are going to slow your healing down. If you can try and open your heart, try and forgive, bearing in mind that, as I said, we are human and it is hard when we've been badly hurt, but try and allow yourself to get there, because then you are open to your own healing. Life changes then. It truly does. I know it. I've seen it so frequently. But also, John, I've experienced it, because all of us in life have been hurt and damaged one way or another. Sometimes quite seriously, some not quite so seriously. But you know, the moment you can actually forgive the person and get on with your life, everything changes. It's like the sun coming out. Energy moves.
Yeah, that's so true. It's so true. And, you know, I think we're very blessed, Maureen, to be living in an era where all this information is now becoming so available, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's so many. I think the internet has helped spread these messages tremendously, and a lot of books and workshops and courses. There is an explosion of information coming through, because I think that what I think happens is that basically the physical material life, in the end, is always going to disappoint us without some spiritual base. And I think it was the Sufi poet Hafiz who said in as many words, you know, he said, it was lovely, a couple of lines, he said, in the end we only have two choices. We either come to God dressed for dancing, or we get wheeled into God's ward on a stretcher. And I quote that often, because I think it's so true. But very often people come to the spiritual understanding, or open up to the possibility of the spiritual element of life, through acute pain, loss, you know, broken relationships, or the death of a child very often, which is so shocking to them, you know, because people expect to outlive their children to outlive them. And when those things happen, it's kind of shocked the system. So I think this is often the way to it. But with what's happening now with the dissemination of information, I think people are getting there. There are more and more people coming dressed for dancing, put it that way, than being wheeled in on a stretcher, which is, I think, wonderful news.
Yes, things are very different now, John. When I first embarked on my pathway many years ago, you used to have mediums and teachers that jealously guarded their information and their knowledge, and it was very hard when I started to get anybody to even recommend a book to you, to be able to study, to be able to learn. You know, they would always just nod at you sagely and say, oh, well, you'll know when it's the time. But But then things began to change some years ago, and I think much more knowledge is available now, and more information is available. But also, I think there's been a shift in people's feelings and beliefs. For me, from the time I started to acquire information and knowledge from all directions, John, Spirit gave me a great deal of information and teaching. Obviously, I've read and I've studied and I've been to workshops and what have you, but you know, I always feel my greatest lessons came from the higher energy and the teachings I got there. But I think for me, it is a joyful thing to share information. And I believe that we are meant to share, but then I believe that that should apply to all areas of our life. But certainly, you know, if we have information and knowledge, pass it on. Let it go round. You know, my father always used to say, you know, money's made round to go around. Well, I think it's a similar thing with knowledge. I think it should be circulated in an even greater way than financially. Do you understand that knowledge is there for everybody, not just the few, not just the ones that want to seem clever, but for everybody. Equally, I would have to say, personally, I don't believe in people that will just keep shoving their information down somebody's throat if they're really not interested, because I think we agree, you and I, that the whole of our life is a pathway, and we're in different places at different times, and it isn't always the right time for somebody to receive information you wish to give, but to be willing to give it and happy to give it when it is required of you.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true, Maureen, and that's something, I mean, we've all made mistakes, and I've certainly made plenty in my lifetime, and through my misguided kind of enthusiasm, I know that I did that a lot, and thankfully I became aware of it, and I realized that I think it is so true that people, you know, they'll get it when they're ready for it, you know, and we've all got different life paths, and we've all got different timings for everything. And I had this beautifully explained to me in Gary Renard's book, you know, the Spirit of the Universe, where his teachers who came to visit him, you know, from the world, they materialized, and they put it like this. Everybody has their time of waking, and if you think of this as when people are unconscious, that they're in a dream, they're having a dream or even a nightmare. And what they said was, if you had a child, if you were looking after and caring for a child who was, let's say, a 5-year-old child who was having a nightmare, you wouldn't dream of going shaking that child and waking it up. You know, you'd let the child go through and then gently, you know, be there for them when they woke up, you'd be there for them. And I thought that was a great analogy of how we ought to be with people who are, you know, waking up from their unconscious sleep, for want of a better word, you know. So avoid shaking them out of it. I think that was one of the things I had to learn, but it's so true. And people will come, you know, and I think often I so agree with you about passing it on. I love the explanation of the word passion. When you break it down, it's pass I on. And I think it's a lovely thing to pass on knowledge. And like you, I think it's meant for everybody, you know. So I totally believe in that. And the other thing which interested me was how you mentioned that when you got solidly into your meditation and you became disciplined in meditation, things started to really take off. I mean, that's something which I really believe. It's not something which I have mastered, I have to say, but I am just back doing it now. But I totally believe that's what happens. So what is your take on that? Why do you think that is? What do you think the importance of meditation is? Why is it so important?
Well, strictly speaking, John, meditation is a state of peace and harmony, but it is a state of listening. And so many people will think that by going into a meditation, they get answers to all of their questions. Very often we do, but it isn't recognized because it isn't in the form, or it isn't what we want to accept. But really,
hello? Hello? Hi, Maureen.